Picture this, a 4-year-old boy abandoned miles from home, told to find his way back with only a few coins for emergency calls. This wasn't neglect, it was my mother's deliberate strategy to build self-reliance. Before turning 12, I was cycling 50 miles cross-country with just basic directions. These weren't acts of cruelty, but calculated lessons in problem-solving that would later fuel my entrepreneurial spirit. My family's DNA runs deep with adventure. My mother disguised herself as a boy to train as a glider pilot when women weren't allowed, and my Uncle Claire's peculiar diet of hedgehogs and wild plants led to him teaching survival skills to elite military units. Our modest home in Shamley Green became the perfect playground for childhood adventurous and early business experiments, with just one rule: be home for dinner. Isn't it fascinating how these early challenges shaped my approach to risk and opportunity? Boarding school at age 8 marked my first clash with institutional authority, a particularly brutal experience for an undiagnosed dyslexic with poor eyesight. I squinted from the back of classrooms, trying to decipher what seemed like hieroglyphics on the blackboard. Teachers mistook my difficulties for laziness, responding with harsh discipline, standing in corners, extra homework I couldn't complete, and sometimes caning. While I could engage in complex verbal discussions, the moment anything needed to be written down, I felt like I was drowning. A devastating rugby injury that tore ligaments and required surgery abruptly ended my athletic career, my one refuge where I'd found recognition. Without sports to hide behind, my academic struggles were fully exposed. During recovery at Cliffview House, my academic performance remained mediocre, but I discovered something far more valuable, my entrepreneurial spirit, through selling Christmas trees and breeding budgerigars. These modest ventures taught me about supply and demand, customer service, and calculated risk-taking. In 1967, armed with nothing but audacity and vision, Johnny Gems and I established Student Magazine in a damp basement flat in London's Bayswater. This space quickly became both headquarters and home, a chaotic blend of work and life that would characterize many early Virgin ventures. Despite our amateur status and basic equipment, just typewriters and a borrowed phone, we secured interviews with cultural icons from Mick Jagger to John Lennon through sheer persistence and refusal to take no for an answer. The basement evolved into a communal living space embodying 1960s counterculture, friends crashing on floors, shared meals of cheap pasta, and dawn discussions about politics and social change. Nobody received salaries. We were fueled by shared enthusiasm. The arrival of Nick Powell marked a crucial turning point. While I chased stories and revolutionary concepts, Nick brought financial discipline, implementing accounting systems, proper invoicing, and tracking every penny. His methodical approach often clashed with our freewheeling style, but ultimately kept us afloat. Have you ever noticed how the most successful ventures often combine dreamers with pragmatists? What began as a basement telephone helpline grew into the Student Advisory Center, a lifeline for young people facing unwanted pregnancies and other challenges. Our team expanded from 3 volunteers to include counselors, medical professionals, and social workers. Beyond pregnancy support, we addressed depression, substance abuse, domestic violence, and sexual orientation, topics largely taboo then. The center's impact was significant, handling over 3,000 cases in the first year, tripling in the second. We helped young women continue their education despite pregnancies and supported individuals through addiction recovery. This experience shaped my positive impact principle. Businesses should create meaningful social change, not just profits. Our work drew controversy, leading to prosecution under the Obscene Publications Act. Defended by John Mortimer, our case, though resulting in conviction, sparked public debate and led to legal reforms within 2 years. When Student Magazine continued struggling financially, I spotted an opportunity in the recent deregulation of retail price maintenance on records. We could sell albums 10-15% below high street prices through mail order, revolutionary at the time. The name Virgin was suggested somewhat jokingly by my friend Tessa, reflecting our complete inexperience in business. When a postal strike threatened to destroy this venture in 1971, we pivoted quickly, opening a physical record store on Oxford Street. The shop's innovative design, comfortable cushions for listening, and staff who shared customers' passion for music created an entirely new retail experience. This success inspired vertical integration, leading to the acquisition of the Manor in Oxfordshire, a country estate we transformed into a residential recording studio. This significant gamble paid off with Mike Oldfield's Tubular Bells, which launched Virgin Records and demonstrated our ability to spot unique talent established labels had overlooked. Each new venture reinforced my developing philosophy. Life is too short not to try new things, conventional wisdom is often wrong, and the greatest risk is taking no risks at all. Doesn't this approach make you wonder what opportunities you might be missing by playing it safe? My first significant leadership test came through conflict with Nick over students' organizational structure, forcing me to navigate the delicate balance between friendship and business interests. This challenging situation taught me crucial lessons: address conflicts early, communicate clearly, and maintain professional boundaries even in close relationships. While we preserved our friendship, the experience became foundational in my leadership journey. During this professional growth period, my personal life took an equally unconventional turn when I moved on to a houseboat on London's canals. This wasn't just about finding housing, it was embracing uncertainty and flexibility. Canal life taught me adaptability and resourcefulness that later proved invaluable in business. Each morning brought new neighbors, perspectives, and challenges, feeding my restless nature and entrepreneurial spirit. The contrast between conventional corporate culture and Virgin's approach became increasingly apparent as we grew. Where traditional businesses emphasized hierarchy and rigid protocols, Virgin cultivated informality and genuine human connection. We eliminated unnecessary bureaucracy, encouraged first-name relationships regardless of position, and prioritized direct communication across all levels. Through all triumphs and setbacks, from Student Magazine to launching Virgin Atlantic, one core philosophy remained constant. Business should be an adventure, not just a way to make money. This belief has guided Virgin's expansion into countless industries, from space travel to hotels, always aiming to improve customer experiences while having fun. I've learned that when you genuinely enjoy what you're doing and focus on creating positive change, financial success often follows naturally. This approach has shaped not only our business strategy, but also how we build teams, develop products, and interact with customers. True leadership isn't about maintaining control or projecting authority. It's about inspiring others to share your vision and empowering them to contribute their best work. Each challenge has reinforced the importance of staying true to core values while remaining flexible enough to adapt. What if we all approached business less as a serious endeavor and more as an exciting adventure? Wouldn't work become more fulfilling and perhaps even more successful? The Virgin story suggests exactly that. When passion meets purpose, extraordinary things happen.